Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ecology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Evident Footprint on BBSRadio.com. I am your host, as you heard on the introduction, Don Nikoloff, and we have a wonderful show planned for you this evening. Notice I did not use the word program. We have enough of that on television and mainstream radio. This is a show. We are going to show you things. It's not a spectacle per se. Yet we plan to have some fun and cover some uncharted territory this evening. By the way, the date is March the 18th on the West Coast, but we are 3 hours older on the East Coast. It is March the 19th. And so we are actually dealing with a guest that's in another time zone for me. So in a way, she fits that first category. And I'm in the latter category. We won't get into personal issues such as how old we are. Actually, that's no one's business but our own. And then again, we have the spiritual. As you heard in the introduction to Evident Footprints, we talk about all types of topics. And yes, we do talk about political conspiracies or political crimes. We talk about music, art, and healing. We do talk about metaphysics, and that's what we're going to do this evening. In fact, tonight's guest has a doctorate in metaphysics, amongst other gifts that she has. And she has written a book called The Call, and we are going to be talking about that book. In fact, you can visit her website via my website, and for those of you who have forgotten the web address, visit directlightproductions.com, click on books, and you will see The Call listed there on my books page, along with some many other fine books that previous guests have written and talked about on this show. And we will be talking about that book as well that I just mentioned. And with that, I bring on board Tony Elizabeth Sarah Petrinovich, Ph.D., and welcome to Evident Footprints.
Oh, thank you, Don. Thank you so much. It's so nice to be here. You know, you were talking about time, and I thought, oh, what a perfect bridge, because I wanted to remember to say something to you, and now is the perfect time to do it. I listened to your interview with Michael St. Clair, and at the beginning of it, you were wishing him happy birthday. And
yes.
The two of you were talking about leap year. And he was saying, well, my birthday was yesterday, but it was really the 28th of February.
Yes.
That's my birthday, too.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
So I'm curious. I'll have to email him and find out what year he was born in. Wouldn't it be a kick if we were born in the same year?
Yes,
That'd
it
be
would.
Great.
Now, I understand he's a few years younger than me. We won't get into that, as I mentioned.
He's not going to tell the secret.
I know women don't. I don't have any problem telling anyone.
Oh, I don't care of telling people how old I am.
Okay. He's either 7 or 8 years younger than me, and I'm 56.
Oh, he's younger than you are?
Oh, yes, he is.
Oh, he is. Oh, okay, because I'm 61.
Yes. Now, what's synchronistic about Michael and I coming together in the fashion we did, in fact, tomorrow night's guests, Bill Ryan and Carrie Cassidy, are responsible for introducing me to Michael. And
oh, great.
I had worked with the Swiss TV Radio Orchestra in Zurich while he was growing up. He was still in school.
Uh-huh.
And we had never met, but just the closeness, or, you know, the...
Right.
Just the consideration that we were that much in each other's presence and
Isn't
didn't have a
wonderful?
Chance to meet. Oh, yeah. It's mm-hmm. it's fantastic.
And
now here we are on other other sides of the world and sharing things. What did you think of that interview, by the way?
Oh, it was wonderful. It was wonderful. He was a delightful guest. Yeah, so nice that he's a friend of yours.
Oh, yes. Well,
very
I have
smart.
Lots of friends like that these
That's
days.
That's great. That's good.
Which, whom I'm grateful for also.
Oh, you bet. That's
and
terrific.
Such as yourself. Well, I mentioned your book, and I didn't want to jump the gun so much other than to let people know that they can peruse my website and find your website. I didn't give out the web address.
Uh-huh.
I figured I would allow you to do that because
okay.
the guests usually do that much more eloquently.
Okay.
And you don't have to do it at this moment, but I thought it would be interesting for you to share your upbringing and how you got into this area
okay.
of metaphysics that you specialize in and how you became expert in your field.
Well, like I like to tell people, I actually came prepackaged this way. I don't have a memory of knowing what life is here separate from knowing life here and life without a body. For me, it's always been that way. So when people start asking me questions about how did you get to be what you are, all I can say is I came the way I am and mm-hmm. didn't have any place for it. I didn't have anybody to talk to. I didn't have any way to relate to life the way most children do because when I started talking to my mother, she really thought I was not making too much sense. Mm-hmm. My father was killed when I was 5. And because I always look at the bigger picture of things rather than just saying, okay, your poor child lost her father when she was 5, I always look at it, the bigger picture and realize that Dad and I had an agreement that when I was 5, he was going to leave, which was going to actually implement my piece of our little drama together by my taking his place within the family structure. And what my mother said to me when my father died was, your father has gone, he is not coming back, you're the father now. And I remember thinking or hearing in my mind the words, now it begins. And from that time forward, I did the chores in the house that, you know, a father would do, take out the garbage, water the lawn, mow the lawn, that kind of thing, at 5 and 6 years old. And it wasn't as though my mother was, you know, quote-unquote abusing me. She simply, first of all, I was supposed to be a boy. I was named after my father. I looked just like him. And she just simply saw me in his place. And then there was my sister, who was a year younger, and so she and my mother kind of teamed up. And I was by myself, but I had this other world that I had always been living in. So for me, it was okay. It was kind of like, this is my day job, and the rest of the time, I get to be where I want to be. So by the time I was 12, I had asked my mother if I could join the cloister. We were Catholic, and she had really good friends in the Carmelite monastery. We lived in Reno, Nevada. And when the Carmelites were cloistered then, I'm not too sure that they're still quite so strictly cloistered. Once you said you were going to go into the cloister, that's exactly what you did. You went behind the wall, you went behind a veil, you did not see mankind again. And mankind did not see you. And I thought that sounded just perfect because then I could simply go to these realms that I was used to visiting and I wouldn't have to explain it to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So my mother went to the bishop, asked the bishop if I could do this, and he said, well, for the summer between her 12th and 13th year, I'll let her go and, you know, test it out, see how it is. So my mom, you know, said, okay, fine. She's going to tell my sister. She takes us out to dinner, and we're sitting in this restaurant, and she tells me that Bishop Green has said yes, and I was very excited. And then she said, and I also wanted to tell you that I went out and I bought horses today, and your sister and I will be horseback riding this summer, and I'll save your horse for you for when you come out of the cloister.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what 12-year-old girl doesn't want a horse?
Yes.
Yeah, she was smart. She knew what she was doing. So I started thinking, well, wait a minute. I don't have to go in the cloister. If I have a horse, we lived in Nevada. I had access to the desert. The horse was being stabled near the desert. I could go out and ride in the desert. I could be alone. I didn't have to be with mankind. That's what I was going to go do. So I did. And I grew up, and I went to school, and then I went to San Francisco in the late 60s, and I was introduced to a holy order there called the Holy Order of Man, so it doesn't exist anymore. And it was based on Catholicism and Christian or Eastern mysticism. And it was perfect for me because it had everything that I was raised with from the Catholic standpoint of beliefs, and at the same time, it believed in enlightenment, self-realization, master teachers, and a hierarchy that made sense to me. So I entered that order, And the master teacher, Master Paul, confirmed for me that the realms that I had been living in did really exist. So then I knew that it wasn't just me, that other people do these things too. And that was my real jumping off place. That was my foundation. I was 20. And it was like, okay, now here I am, and I can go from this place forward because now I know I'm not alone. So I stayed in the order for several years, and then I left as a master teacher. And I've been doing my own work since then. I've been teaching since then. And then I've got a degree in metaphysics, and I did all the other scholastic things that I've done. But that was my real formal foundation of saying, there are many people on this planet that understand what you're saying and what you're experiencing, and you're not by yourself.
I see. Now, I love horses. What happened to the horse?
Oh, well, the horse eventually got sold, and then as life went on, I've had horses since then, off and on. Two or three times I've had different little herds of horses and sold them or moved on and did something different. In fact, I was just looking at a horse the other day here on the island where I live that I just want really, really bad, except that we want to do some traveling, and I don't want to leave a horse and not be taking care of it and have to rely on other people to take care of it, and so I'm not going to buy it. But I still have that connection. I mean, I love horses, too. They're just marvelous creatures.
If you want to fly me out there in your absence, I'll be happy to babysit.
There you go. I'll buy the horse, and you can come be the babysitter. I think that would be marvelous. I'm sure the horse would love it, too.
Yeah. No, I love animals, and they're really a good way of grounding us, and actually in multiple ways. And I know that you're going to be talking about that probably at some point, if not tonight, in the future, our responsibility to take care of animals, but the responsibility that they have to take care of us.
Oh, and they do a marvelous job. We have a fantastic dog, and I haven't had dogs in my life a lot. I've had cats a lot. I've had cats, mystical cats, that sent me messages and told me things and communicated with me. They were just beautiful. And this dog we have is fantastic. You can speak to him full sentences, and he just does whatever you tell him to do.
Mm-hmm.
He's so smart. He's just wonderful. Yeah, they're beautiful, beautiful. We're so gifted to have these beings with us.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Okay, so you basically had your experience there at the cloister, and then what transpired after that?
Then I left, and I went on about my life. I kind of got embroiled in the business world for a while. I was still teaching at night and teaching on the weekends, but I got involved in the legal profession for a while and did that for many, many, many years. And segued out of that, got a little tired of that after, maybe 15, 20 years, and worked in the software profession for a while. Still, always teaching at night, teaching on the weekends, doing healing work, doing spiritual counseling. I've always done it ever since I was, I can remember. And then worked in the software business probably for a good 12 years, and then I decided that I was done with business altogether, short of my own. And I created Sacred Spaces, which is my company, and started working full-time at what I'm doing now, which is retreats, writing, workshops, spiritual guidance, energy healing, etc. And I was in the middle of writing a book, which still isn't finished, about a past life or parallel life, as I like to call them because there's no time, that I remember in depth. And it's very... it's important that I put this book out there, and I know that. And so I'm in the middle of doing that. This was 2002. And I was walking down the hall, and this is in the first chapter of my book, The Call. I had just finished painting my bedroom, and I was walking down the hall to go clean the brushes, et cetera, and I got this feeling that I get when I know information is coming in, and it kind of is like this little velvet curtain comes over me. And I thought, oh, my gosh, something's coming, completely unbidden. I'm used to doing readings for people or asking for information, and then I ask and I wait, and here it comes, and I'm used to that. But this was coming without my having said anything. And what I got was information like somebody slipping a CD of information into you and saying, here's your data, go type it. And that's how the book The Call came to me. And what I got first was The Call, to awaken those beings that were going to be called angelic humans. So the very first thing was I typed that up and I sent it out to my whole email list thinking, well, people will either, you know, understand it or they won't. And I got just these reams of responses because people were passing it on to other people. It went all around the world. And all these people were saying, oh, my gosh, I am so glad you finally said something. I have been waiting for this. And I put some of their responses in my book. I just put a few in there. But I just got more and more every day, every day, every day. And so we had a gathering, and people came from all over. They flew from Bermuda. They flew from islands all over the place. And we all got together and just kind of met each other just for like one gathering to get this kick started. And we did it here in Washington State. And the book was published. It was like, this was in September, and the book was published by December. It just took me no time at all to write it.
That's very, very rapid, yes.
Oh, it was just there inside of me, and so I just did it. Yes. And then I did the DNA Reawakening CD to go with it so people wouldn't have to read that piece of information and that ritual and try and do it at the same time that they were reading it. And, you know, synchronistically I ran into this fellow that I got to be friends with who just happens to be a piano composer, you know, and who said, oh, yeah, sure, I'll do the music for you. You know, it was just one of those wonderful, wonderful experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So it's out there now, and I've got my other book that I'm still writing, and a novel, actually, that's almost finished that I'm going to put out. It's going to be a novel based on experiences I've had in my life that were really experiences of the street. It's talking to just the person who's in the grocery store picking up a paperback and wants to read it. But within it is mixed all of the law of attraction, creation, mysticism, and how we really create our experiences in our life.
Mm-hmm.
So that's,
now I'm wondering, is your appearance on Evident Footprints going to be in that street chapter? Or
well, where would you like it to be, huh?
I don't know. I'm just
wondering. You can opt for any part of it you want.
I told you I'm crazy, so.
Well, it'd be okay. Yeah, I know, Philip, my boyfriend's having so much fun reading it, editing it, because some of it's a little racy, and he's going, oh, you really did that, huh? This is kind of nice.
Yeah. Yes.
It's going to be fun.
I notice, first of all, for the listeners' audience, for the listening audience, but also just, for me to you, you were very open and very honest with what you shared. I mean, you shared some personal events in your life prior to you or after, let's say, when you were doing your more advanced studies and you mm-hmm. had found the group you were looking for basically mm-hmm. and decided that was for you. You were very candid, let's say, about mm-hmm. Certain things, and a lot of people have a problem with that. For numerous reasons, but
everybody wants to hide.
Well, if you're going to tell the truth, you tell the truth, right?
But the thing is, Don, you know it. You can't hide. It's impossible to hide. You're going to get found out.
Yes.
I mean, so you might as well just start there to begin with.
Yes, exactly. I think that's
finding fun.
Out about our politicians, aren't
we? Yeah, to you and I was just thought the exact same thought.
Yes. Exactly.
At least mine isn't splashed all over the front pages of the New York Times.
Yeah. You mentioned something, and I don't intend to take anything out of sequence according to how you're...
Oh, I have no sequence. I don't care.
Planning your talk for tonight or whatever. You mentioned multidimensionality.
Yes.
Cryptically, in that, we have parallel timelines. There really
right.
is no time.
Right.
And then the recognition of being an angelic human.
Mm-hmm.
Some people wonder, some people worship angels, or, they have this belief in angels. They're not really mm-hmm. sure. They don't have the knowledge of angelic realms, but they believe that they can pray to an angel or that an angel will be their savior or their rescuer when they're in dire need.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the aspect or the concept that some of us are angels and we're inhabiting bodies, basically,
mm-hmm,
waiting
mm-hmm.
for the moment to make our appearance.
Da-da-da-dum. The maestro.
Is that the $64,000 question answered there?
Well, see, what happens is that our language gets in our way.
Yeah.
So when we say angel, everybody goes, oh, yeah, I know those things with the wings and the halo that run around doing good deeds.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about those guys. Those guys are made up. Somebody needed to paint something to make it appear, like the wings mean that they can appear in certain places really fast. The halo means that they have good intention. You know, the white gown makes them look pure, blah, blah, blah. All of that is part of the religious indoctrination, if you would, that we all receive in a variety of different ways. So there's angels in different cultures and in different religions. They're these spirit beings. The word angel itself means messenger. So when we're talking about angelic humans, and the human, Homo sapien, is wise man. So you're saying angelic human means a wise man who has a message. And that message is encoded inside of our bodies. It's in our DNA. It's in our cell structure. And we all know what our message is. So when somebody says that they don't know, what they're really saying is, I don't want to look. Or I've looked and I'm afraid to say anything. It's back to the hiding part. So when the call goes out to someone and to say, you know, you're an angelic human, it's saying you have a message. Now, what is it? And it doesn't have to be some great, you know, soliloquy from the mountaintop. It can be anything that is what we are embodying in this lifetime, based on also the other lifetimes that are running parallel that impact this lifetime and, you know, all the other things that balance it out. But at the same time, we've come to this planet at this time with a message. Nobody's coming here just for sport, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what the call is about. So if somebody says, well, how do I know if I'm an angelic human? My answer is, yes, you just said it. You wouldn't be asking me that question if you were not. Because I've had people who have responded to it with, I do not want to hear you say that again. Don't email me again. Get out of my life. I don't want to talk about it. A lot of different responses, which tell me these people are not ready to look. Okay, leave them alone. But as soon as a person starts to ask the question and they're curious, that tells me that something is awakening inside of them and they want to know more.
Yes.
So
well, that denial is the same we find when you talk about fluoride in water or chemtrails
yes,
in the sky.
Oh, yes, exactly.
You know, it's the same thing. And
right.
It's fear-based, really.
Yes, it is. And it's also, and when you talk about things like fluoride, like fluoride in the water and politics, I think people feel like they do not have any control over any of that. Like it's too big.
Yes.
So if you don't look at it, then it's not there.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than realizing we are co-creating this world together.
Yes.
And we're co-creating our futures together, and we have a choice to make in what we decide to intend in that creation.
Mm-hmm.
So depending upon what the person's message is, I just did a reading today for a fellow that I don't know. I have absolutely no knowledge of him at all. All I know is he emailed me and he says he wants a reading. And I do this for people a lot, so people I don't know, which makes it really easy because there's absolutely, I have no concept of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just sit back and I listen. I'm talking and I'm recording and I put it on the CD and I send it to them, except that I don't know what I'm going to say. And it turns out that this man's message is, he's the messenger to the messengers. When he activates, somebody else. So his message isn't just like he has a message. His message is to wake up the person who has a message.
I see.
It was amazing. I had never seen that before, and I always get a kick out of it because I always learn something when I do these transmissions because then I find out more ways that we are actually manifesting. So that's a good example of here's a person whose message is to make sure everybody around him knows they have a message. And that's all he has to do. He doesn't have to be anything else. He has his business and he has all these other things going on in his life, he tells me. But this is all he really has to do.
Now,
so it's really
would you be surprised if in a week he came to you and said, I applied for that job at the post office and got it?
I love it, but they didn't hire me. They didn't read my credentials. They didn't look at my soul. So it's really about knowing what you feel inside and following it. One lady who works in the schools as a school counselor several years ago in a workshop started crying when I talked about this and said, all I want to do is work with the elephants in Africa. It was the last thing I expected her to say. I knew her. And I said, well, honey, I didn't know that. Why don't you do something about it? And she wouldn't do it because it would mean uprooting her family. It would change their lifestyle. I said, well, you don't have to just move to Africa. There's lots of different things you can do with elephants. And she said, I don't even want to talk about it anymore. She said, I just can't go there. She wants
now,
it so much.
I know that an elephant never forgets. She could have given them the message and allowed them to spread it.
Exactly. You know. But it's a good example of how sometimes people have all of these little secrets inside of them that they don't ever want to really talk about because they don't think it's possible to fulfill them, to fulfill that desire, that yearning.
Well, I learned a long time ago that the best kind of leadership was leadership by example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, willing to roll up your sleeves and show others that there is a way to accomplish things. That applies to creation as well.
Oh, absolutely. I agree completely. And then, of course, we have another little piece of my little life story that just popped up in whatever it was, 1998, the light orbs that people are now seeing and taking. Are you familiar with them?
Oh, yes, I am,
okay,
yeah.
The light orb guys.
Yeah.
And they came into my life in, it was either 98 or 99, I don't remember exactly. And I was seeing them, and they were in my mind, and they were telling me things, and I just kind of lived with it. I didn't really know that other people were experiencing it, too. There was a little bit on the web. There wasn't hardly anything anywhere. And so I just thought, well, this is just, you know, they're one of my little phenomena experiences. And then in 2004, I was on the Olympic Peninsula in La Push, Washington, out right on the ocean. It's just a great place to be. And all of a sudden, there were orbs everywhere. I took pictures because you couldn't move. They were just, you know, neck and neck everywhere. And I said, what is this about? What do you want? And they said, we're trying to get your attention. And I said, okay, you've got it. Now what? And they said, we want you to speak for us. We want you to say words for us. We want you to transmit information for us. And I said, you mean kind of like I do soul readings? And they said, yeah, that would be a good word. That would work. And I said, well, I don't really know what you are, and I have to tell people what you are because they're going to ask me. And they said, we are the guardians of your soul. And I said, okay. You know, I didn't ask any more questions. You know, Pollyanna here. I just go, oh, all right. Okay, I'll do it. So I put it on my webpage, and I put what they said, and I said, you know, I'll do it. And this woman emailed me from Canada a couple weeks later, and she said, you have brought me peace. I just read your website. And I thought, wow, that's nice. I wonder what that's about. So I emailed her, and I asked her, and she said that she had two children. One was a young child, like a toddler, and one was, you know, a grown young man. And she had, like, two families with her children. And the older one had been gone, and he came back home to British Columbia there to die. And he told her that. And he said, I have come back to die at home because I'm going to become a guardian of the soul. And she didn't know what he was talking about. And sure enough, he died. And as soon as he did, all of the pictures she took of the younger boy has this huge orb. I mean, it's immense. It's bigger than the child. It's just so big around it in all of the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be on a certain day. She just takes a picture of the child and it's there.
Yeah, like an expansion of the etheric body, you're saying?
Well, it was as though his older brother, after he died, had begun taking care of the younger brother.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, wow, when they say guardian of the soul, they're meaning, like, we could maybe do this too. Maybe this is possible for us. So that, because people keep saying, well, what are they? Well, they tell me they're conscious beings that use this plasma-type form to let us see them because our own light visual spectrum ability is now being enhanced to the point where we can. Because a lot of people think you have to have a camera. Well, no, you don't. You can see them with your naked eye. So it doesn't have anything to do with a camera.
Yes.
So just the other day, in fact, I just posted a YouTube 2 weeks ago on this. the other day, I was talking to somebody, and all of a sudden, in the middle of the conversation, the orbs popped in, which they had never done that with me before, not like that, and they just said, "We're the guardians of your love." And I went, "What? Okay." And somehow I fitted into the conversation. I was trying to figure out what it all meant, and it was just kind of crazy. And so after the conversation was over, I asked them what they were talking about, and they said, "We are guarding your capacity to love." I thought, wow, that's kind of huge. So I said, all right, I'd like to know more about it. And I'll tell you what I want to do is I want my YouTube this weekend, because I'm posting them every weekend, to be that. I want you to talk through me to the camera and answer that question. And they got all excited and said, yes, we will. So they did. And so now what I'm realizing is what they're doing is it's like they're holding the energy stream with us as we awaken to the fact that we are love. And I know that sounds really, you know, kind of airy-fairy, but the capacity to love is what we are. And when you really activate that within yourself and you know that that's all that you embody, that there isn't anything else that you embody, then you know your connection to Source.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're holding, and they call it our treasure chest.
Now, Tony, my experience has been primarily through music. I have learned about love through music and the love frequency, the music of the spheres, and the fact that God created everything out of love, and that love comes in various forms. Light is one way.
Yes.
Sound
is
another.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are just different frequencies of the same thing. What else would you call it but love?
Exactly.
And I think I know other people, in fact, I have a guest later this week on Thursday who operates out of that frequency in vibrational and sound healing, the Ann Hampton. So these are synchronicities that are happening here that is, as the New World Order agenda speeds up, it seems like we are speeding up, too.
Phenomenally. And it's one of the reasons, like, if you watch old movies and, you know, you watch just technology from, like, you know, 5 years ago, everything looks so slow.
Yes.
You know, everything looks like it's just kind of plodding along. You think, my God, I was really entertained by that 5 years ago. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
We are moving so much faster, and we're vibrating so much faster.
Yes. So I know the truth about what you're talking about here. Now, some people expect that to take on a certain form or make a certain type of appearance, and they're not open to, you know, the concept of expanded consciousness, where you would contemplate that something like a light orb or an orb of light could contain intelligence.
Yeah.
Yet pilots in World War II described orbs of light flying along their planes, and they called them Foo Fighters. They thought they were possibly alien aircraft.
I remember that.
And it was probably them being protected.
Oh, I'm sure. Just, you know, and then Philip, my boyfriend, emailed me this picture the other day. He said, take a look at this. And it was a picture off of some online newspaper. It wasn't an alternative newspaper or, you know, something trying to make a point. It was just a picture, like, here's a news story. And there was a picture with it, and it was a picture of a man who was being hung in Iraq, and there were orbs all around him and the people hanging him. And I thought, yeah, guardian of love. Who's to say? Obviously, the man who's being hung is experiencing an uncomfortable experience. We get that. But who's to say what the two men who are doing it are experiencing?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're doing it out of such fear, because if they don't hang him, they're going to get hung.
Mm-hmm.
That they're just doing whatever they need to do, and yet they're also the embodiment of love when you get down to the bottom line. And here are all these orbs, you know, being these guardians. I mean, it was phenomenal.
No, I don't think anyone that's conscious of any aspect of the word love is going to think it's corny. There are those that are devoid of it, we know, but no one will judge you for talking about that. In fact, aren't we all seeking more of that?
Oh, absolutely, and I believe the people who, like you say, are devoid of it are in such pain they can't even begin to look at what they're missing. it hurts so bad. So they just pretend it's not there.
Yes.
And they do and it a lot of through anger, abuse. Mm-hmm. I mean, they do some horrible things.
Yes.
And it's only pain.
Yeah, the scenario you described in Iraq almost implies, if I were to intuit what was going on, is this man was hung, possibly falsely accused of a crime. Or
probably so.
Convicted.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. Yeah.
I mean, the handwriting's on the wall on that one.
Right. Right.
Just
exactly.
And that's not to say that even the worst mass murderer might not experience the same thing.
Right.
I think it's a question of coming to some repentance on a soul level that he fulfilled his contract, whatever that was, and
mm-hmm.
even though it was, or maybe he didn't fulfill it exactly like it should, and it went awry in some fashion.
Yeah, we don't know.
Yeah, we get into this blame thing and
mm-hmm.
judgment, and we immediately fall into the matrix.
Exactly. There. That's exactly what happens. You hit it right on the head. That's
yes.
exactly what happens, because we think we know, and we don't know. We don't have a clue. All we know is barely what we're doing. How can we possibly stand in judgment of what somebody else is doing?
Yes. Now, I did get the $64,000 question right, so maybe I do.
You intuited the answer.
Just joking. Well, I'm speaking for the listeners out there that, I'm picking up some of their thoughts, and they're asking those types of questions.
Sure,
And maybe me too. Part of me is asking that question as well, because sometimes it is correct to put the cart before the horse, and the horse is going in the other direction. You know.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to think everything has to follow a specific pattern because we've become so frequency controlled and so indoctrinated into following a particular path that's laid out for us instead of creating our own path and experiencing the joy of that spontaneity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it changes everything. And I mentioned in the call a little bit about slippage. I don't know if you got to that part or not, but it's what
actually I did, yes. But
okay, the word I use for multidimensionality, for experiencing it, because what actually happens is, and that's why I use the word slip, it's as though you slip through a space into another space, and you're not really slipping. It's just, lack of a better word, where you're experiencing life in a different way than those people who are around you.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens to us a lot. And it happens to us all the time. And sometimes people don't realize it. They think they've been daydreaming or, how did all that time go by kind of thing. And when you really experience it consciously enough, then you can realize that we can do it all the time. We can just move from one dimension to another
mm-hmm.
and experience things in a totally different way. And it's
yes,
absolutely up to us.
Go ahead.
No, it's up to us. I mean, we have to make the decision whether we want to do that or not. And when people get tied down and they get really tight in their linear thinking, then they can't, because then they're trying to control what's here, and they're so busy controlling what's here, they can't go someplace else. They're just like they're tethered.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really about relaxing the need for control.
Yes.
And simply letting it happen.
I did read that. In fact, I remember it was on a left page of the book when I was reading that.
Yeah, it is on the left page. You're right. You're right. Yeah, you're correct. Excuse me.
and I thought, well, that's an interesting description you gave it, because that's something I did when I was young all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I did this in geographical images that I would see. I would see tetrahedrons and circles and, mathematical representations of things that I would later on invent in my life. And I do that constantly with music. I mean, that's
I can imagine.
I can't turn that off.
Yeah, I can imagine that would be true.
And when if I'm doing a reading or working on a case or researching, I often fall into that, where
mm-hmm.
I begin all of a sudden just to see all the dimensions of something mm-hmm. hidden within let's say, somewhat inaccurate historical portrait of an event or a person.
Yeah.
And that sort of reveals the truth to me in that way. So mm-hmm. I understand what you're saying. And it is scary to someone the first time it happens when they realize what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
If they can't talk about it or they don't have anything to look towards as a foundation for that type of thinking.
No, and there isn't a lot of support for it in the world. That's part of the issue. You know, what are you going to do, run next door to your neighbor and say, oh, guess what just happened to me? Yeah, they're not going to get it.
Here's a cup
that's
of sugar
nice.
And an egg. Get out of here.
Yeah, a cup of sugar and egg. Go. Make your cake. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, and that it, one of the questions I was asked on an interview a couple months ago by this wonderful lady named Faith Rinoli, she said that she and another lady that she knew wanted to find out what had happened in my life since the call came out. What have I found that's been like, you know, a prevailing kind of sequence of events, or has there been anything that's, you know, showed its head? And I said, well, I think if I was going to look for an overall theme among people that I've talked with, is the lack of support, the lack of a peer group, the lack of beings who they feel are like-minded. That's what most people seem to be looking for when they're saying, you know, if I could have one thing, this is what I want. I would like to have a group that I can sit and talk with, and they understand where I'm coming from. So having talked with that many people, it's been a lot, who have this feeling, tells me that it's coming, because we don't yearn for something that we don't know. It's a yearning to recreate something that we remember. Mm-hmm. So it feels to me as though that's coming for us, so that there are more and more groups of people who can feel that they can support each other in a mass consciousness paradigm that isn't quite, you know, reflecting back to us the way that we see things.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, you hit the nail on the head when you said remember, because that's what we're really doing.
That is what we're doing. And one thing that was really kind of a great surprise for me, and I did a YouTube on this one too, was I had a dream, gosh, probably 2.5 months ago, and I am basically fairly apolitical. Right at the moment, that's not true. But on a general basis, I don't really get involved in politics very much.
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't something I pay a lot of attention to. I've been kind of paying attention right now to specific aspects, but I don't, you know, turn on the TV and watch the news and read it on the internet and buy the magazines. So when I had this political dream, I really paid attention to it because it was so far removed from anything I usually dream about. And I have very vivid dreams and a lucid dreamer. I really remember them and I act in them and I do all these things. So they kind of follow a theme. It's kind of like I go to sleep and I keep on working, but in a different place. So I had this dream and I was in this room and there's this kind of a board of directors kind of table sitting there, and I'm there, and they're all talking about the upcoming election. And they're kind of looking at me for input, and I don't really have anything to say. So I'm kind of just being quiet, and it was just kind of a watching all of this going on. I woke up, I went right back to sleep, I'm back in the same room, but now I'm on the other side of the table, and somebody has come in and brought in this enormous book. It's like one of those great big books like you think would be the Book of God or something. And it's on the table, and I'm trying to see it, but I can't see it because there's too many people leaning over it looking at it. And one of them says, the man who is going to be elected will bring us the forgotten knowledge. And then they just close the book, and I wake up. And that was it. And I thought, my gosh, what's that about?
Sounds like Barney Frank they were talking about.
Barney Frank. Who's Barney Frank?
He's a congressman.
Oh, okay. See, I'm politically incorrect. I don't know the congressman's name.
There's a bit of a joke in that one, but I'll let it.
Okay. But anyway, so for me, it was very hopeful. It was like, oh, okay, we're going to remember. And then when I really started thinking about it, and I thought, okay, how do I see this? You know, from my own perspective. I don't necessarily think that we're going to elect somebody who's going to get up there and go, okay, I'm now going to bring you the great knowledge of the beyond. What I think is that it will set up an environment for us to remember ourselves. That's all
yes.
we need. The genes activate when the environment is correct. So all we need to do is to have the correct environment for the whole species to go, oh, yeah, I remember.
Actually, that statement that they made could have applied or could be applied to Congressman Ron Paul, who is this mystery candidate that the media doesn't want to report.
Yeah, I know. I saw him on Steve Colbert.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I love Steve Colbert and Jon Stewart. Those are my two guys. But he was great. He was wonderful. He's quite a man.
He's well liked amongst. He's probably the most popular of all the congressmen. He's been around for a long time, but he does not subscribe to the status quo.
He doesn't.
And he has a tremendous grassroots following, which is spawning around the country.
Oh, that's very good.
And in spite of what is and is not being reported in the mainstream media, he's not out of the race by any means right now.
No, I don't think so.
I'm compelled to say that we're going to experience some sort of miracle in this drama that's unfolding before us.
That would be lovely. I'm ready for that.
Those like you and myself and others who intuit or impulse to see the unseen sense that something is going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, there is definitely something going to happen. Yeah, we're not just going to sail through this. Something's up. Yeah.
Yes.
I agree.
Now, off the air, you had kind of quipped something about my name and implied that maybe I was going to be having a different name at some point.
Well, I don't know. See, that's just it. It just popped out. Maybe so. I did. That's all I got was that you said you can call me Don, and I felt like, well, not for long. I thought, oh, okay, well, not for long. I don't know what that's about, so we'll have to see what that is.
Hmm.
And then you said you had another name that people call you Maestro. I think that's wonderful. What a compliment.
Yeah, that's kind of a nickname related to music
uh-huh.
endeavors, you know. So, and it stuck, and, I mean, even the rap artists know about it, you know.
Oh, that's sweet.
So it's interesting how others see you or, you know, how they want to identify themselves with you.
Oh, isn't that true?
And that has, I mean, it's a matter of respect in Europe, in many countries. They refer to the conductor of an orchestra
as
a maestro.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
And so it's a salutation of respect and politeness. But that it hung in there as a nickname is kind of unusual.
Did you put it on your website?
Actually, I haven't. Do you think I should?
Yes, you should. In fact, you should put it on your homepage in big letters.
Yeah, maybe
I
will.
I can see it.
What color do you see it in?
White.
In white. Okay.
I see it in white.
The White Maestro. Okay.
The White Maestro. I think that would be wonderful. Maybe you put a little gold around it or something. That would be very nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It would be
good. I didn't mean to put you on the spot asking you
no,
that question.
No, you didn't.
If
I don't know, I'm the first one to tell you. But that's just what I got. I mean, that isn't something that's typical. I mean, mostly when people tell me their names, I just make an effort to remember them.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, there's no sense in remembering it for very long for some reason. I don't know why. That's interesting.
Well,
I'll have to look into that a little bit further.
Yeah, it's interesting how some people identify with their name. I mean, you know, the name I have, I was given, but I also understand that on some level, on a spiritual level, that our parents or whoever ends up naming us is impulsed to give us
uh-huh.
a name.
Uh-huh.
That information comes through, and so often those giving the name are totally unconscious of the fact that has already been decided long before
right.
we arrive.
Right. I agree.
And that's my personal feeling about it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And that's one of the reasons that I took on the name Sarah first and then Elizabeth and added them to my name, because different aspects of me came out of Tony that I actually operate in. And when I use those names, for a long time, for years, I was known as Elizabeth. And I was doing, my work was totally different. And then I put the Tony back in front of it, and then it changed again. And the vibration of your name changes what you're experiencing and what you're creating. So I play with them, and I use them.
If, can you imagine if your name, your first name or your middle name had been K, then you would have been called K.
Sarah. Yeah, I know. Yes, yeah, I've been told that before, too.
Oh, have you? Okay, well. And I was up all night writing that one, too.
Well, it is the middle of the night for you, isn't it? My gosh, it's 2 o'clock in the morning.
Well, I mean, last night I was up. No, I'm kidding. Yes, it's going on 2 o'clock in the morning here, but I'm up late because I like the quiet time.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
It's a good time to meditate or to pray or to research or to create, for that matter.
Well, you know something about the quiet time in the dark? I don't know if you know this. Do you know about the pineal gland, how it operates in the dark?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and that it doesn't like the light. It shuts down in the light, and it opens up in the dark, and that's
mm-hmm.
our connection to our clair powers. Yeah, it's wonderful. When I first started doing readings, I used to do them in the dark all the time. Now I can do them anywhere, but when I first got into it, I thought, oh, I want all the help I can get here, and I just turn off the lights and just sit there in the dark, and poof, it would be just beautiful. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
it's great. It's a wonderful way for people to start to learn meditation.
Yes. Well, I've gotten to the point where I can kind of shut off my perception of the physical light, if you know what I mean, even
yeah.
with the
uh-huh.
eyes open.
Yeah.
When you start seeing it, when you see something, you see it, and you pay no attention to what's in front of you.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
And I think in the beginning, when you're first learning, let's say how to deal with, you know, what's coming through, and
uh-huh.
you know, you want to make sure that it's not filtered.
Right.
You are struggling with the connection that we have and the dependence upon the normal physical senses. It's
mm-hmm.
not a physical sense whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it can be much more vivid than what we see with our eyes.
Oh, no, I agree completely. And what I was surprised at and when I first started doing it was I was so used to living in this multidimensional world, but it was all about me. It wasn't about anybody else. So
mm-hmm.
it was just my life. And then when I started getting information for other people, then I experienced what you were just talking about, wanting to make sure I wasn't interfering, wanting to make sure it all made sense, wanting to make sure before I said anything to them that I understood what it was about. And I, you know, went through all of those pieces until I finally got to a point where I realized that I couldn't make sure. All I could do was say what I was getting.
Be the
and
messenger.
Not be attached to it.
Yeah. I think what you're describing is the self-consciousness about the message when in reality you're just the messenger.
Right, exactly. And also, I know what I was feeling right at first was I didn't want to insult somebody or hurt their feelings or say something that was going to bring up a bad subject or any of those things that would impact a person and make them uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That lasted about 6 months, and then that was out the door. It was like, I can't control this. I mean, if they don't like it, I'm sorry, but they asked me, and so here it is.
My biggest concern when I first began, let's say, sharing what I was, you know, intuiting with other people,
mm-hmm.
was that I would make a mistake and say something that wasn't true.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I kind of understand that.
In other words, things could come through distorted. Or you could misspeak, and it could become misunderstood.
Uh-huh,
So I was careful about my choice of words, like you just described.
Right, have to.
But I learned to say, I don't see anything now, and often just making that statement opened up the gates, the floodgates.
Oh, that's good. That's a good thing to do. That's wonderful.
Well,
yeah, and then you know.
In our remaining moments, this is so interesting. I've got to have you back again soon.
Oh, it's
so
fun. Oh, yeah, we could go on for a long time.
I
have a million things I could talk about.
I would like to get into the fact that your book is basically, as you describe it, a primer for folks that want to study this and learn more about themselves in
mm-hmm.
in relationship to angels and the fact that they themselves are an angelic human and how you teach that and share some of the experiences with us.
That would be fun.
So before we have to sign off here, give us your website, if you would, and any important dates or any information that you think people should have or would want to have to check out more than just your book, but things you're doing, maybe some clinics or special events that you might be involved in.
Okay. I have two websites. One is the easiest one to remember is angelichuman.com, and the other one is sacredspaceswa.com, and I'll spell that SACREDSP as in Paul, ACESWA.com. The Angelic Human website is mainly for the Angelic Human and the book, and the Sacred Spaces website is more for everything else that I do.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to ask. So if someone wants a reading or they want to make contact with you in some way, email you, that you have all the appropriate information on your website.
It's on my website. You can reach me through my website. My phone number, my mailing address, my email address are on both of the websites.
Okay. Now, do you have financing? No, I'm just...
Yeah, we can figure that out. We always don't ever let money stand in your way.
I'm just kidding. Once I went to a pizza place where I asked that question.
Oh, really? What did they say? Did they just stand there and look at you?
No, we don't. What do you want to finance?
The and pizza, said, well, sweetie.
Let's start with the pepperoni.
Well, what I would like to just talk about when you said, you know, things that are going on, we host retreats here on Lopez Island that are really something that I would invite people to take a look at. If you go to the Angelic Human site, it's under Vacation from Illusion, and we have retreats here from a day to 5 days where you can come and lay your guts out on the table of illusion, and we will make sure that it is sacrificed to the gods of reality so that you can go home and know that you're living your own truth. And I really enjoy doing it. I'm very good at it. I don't let anybody get away with anything. And everybody who's been here just has had a marvelous time because, to me, it isn't just boot camp. It's fun. Mm-hmm. And we just really enjoy ourselves. So all the information is there, and the amount of money and the accommodations and the food and everything is all on my webpage. So people can take a look at that and see if that is enticing to them. This is a marvelous place to be. It's a magnetic vortex that was part of Lemuria, and you can really feel it when you're here.
I love that. I stood in some vortexes in another state, and the experience, well, you heard a little bit about that if you listened to that Michael St. Clair interview. And I've described it somewhat on some other shows. But really, there are no words to describe the experience, both while it's happening as well as, you know, after it's happened. It's something that someone really needs to experience firsthand there to understand.
Oh yeah,
what
I
happens.
Agree. It was the first time I ever, when I laid on this earth, on this island, naked, it was the first time in my life that I ever experienced earth, the actual vibration of earth as a living object that made me cry.
Wow.
It was phenomenal.
Now, I had to have my clothes on. I was with a group of people when
this
happened.
Probably a good idea. Probably a good idea. No, I was in the bushes. I was off where nobody could see me.
it's really a phenomenon for anyone listening out there that you just cannot imagine unless you experience it firsthand. I can say that. Now, with the variety of people you get from all over the world, do you have to go through this experience of the belief system in regard to religion and, you know, people's faith and what conflicts with what's going on here? Because you're not really approaching this from a religious aspect. You're more or less looking at the reality of the spirit without attaching a label to it, correct?
Right. And it depends upon what a person's belief system is and what they want to do with it. If somebody came to me, and I haven't run into it a lot from the standpoint of people having issues. Most people who have belief systems, past tense, want to get rid of them and want to find what their own truth is because their belief system isn't serving them anymore. If somebody has a belief system that is serving them and they still want to get further into their inner self and really get into their core, we can work with that. And they don't have to give up their belief system if they don't want to. But 9 times out of 10, once you start doing that, you're going to end up giving up your belief system because you're going to find out it came from somebody else and all you want is what you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it just depends upon what people want to do.
Yeah.
I'm really open to whatever is going to serve the person in the moment because I know in the next moment they have absolutely no idea what's going to happen. And if they just leave themselves open to this present moment, then it's going to carry them into the creation that they really want, even though they don't even know they want what mm-hmm. they're going to experience next.
Well, the book you described in your dream, I saw in my NDE.
Oh, great.
Mine, however, was the Universal Book of Music.
Oh, I can imagine.
This book was huge. And
lovely.
It had gold covers, and it was a stamped, raised gold stamp.
Very fancy.
The cover itself was a quarter inch thick, and the symbols that were on the cover were another quarter inch high.
Did they say maestro?
So
I wouldn't have been surprised.
And I marveled over what was in this book. I said, and I was amongst angels too.
Uh-huh,
and I said, uh-huh. I remember this. I knew this when I went to Earth. I studied this, and I'm so happy to have found it again.
Oh, beautiful.
And I came back with that.
Oh, sweet.
So I know that I will be creating the music based upon those principles in the near future. I'll use it in that tense.
Oh, that's wonderful. Can't wait to hear.
So when you mentioned that book, that resonated with me because I've seen one like it.
That's great.
So
yeah,
it was
fun.
Very real experiences. Well, Tony, we are out of time. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
You're welcome.
And again, I want to welcome you back again soon. Will you come back again?
Oh, I'd love it. I'd love it. It's so much fun.
Okay,
yes, we'll enjoy it very much.
We will pick up where we left off, and I'll try to keep the smart alecky.
Oh, no, don't you dare. You wouldn't want to ruin your personality.
Okay. I look forward to the next time. And
oh, me too.
Again, I want to tell all the listeners out there, you can visit Tony Sarapetrinovich's website at www.sacredspaceswa.com. and www.angelichuman.com. And you can visit directlightproductions.com, my website, and see her book on my books page. And with that, I want to again thank you, Tony.
Thank you,
the listeners out there. Also, Dr. Len Horowitz for the nice promo he gave me before my show began tonight. He always does this, and I've got to figure a way to get the same kind of promos out to him. Anyway, thank you, Dr. Horowitz, and you will be on my show next Tuesday, Dr. Horowitz, so look forward to that event. He was concerned about that. And I want to thank Seth for a great job on the audio tonight, as well as Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Join us tomorrow night when our special guest will be Bill Ryan and Carrie Cassidy from ProjectCamelot.org. In the meantime, peace, love, and light, and have a good night.